peace transforms our lives, enabling us to know and love the God who created us, to live freely in accordance with his will, and to cooperate in building a truly human and fraternal society.
Why do I have to go to Mass? Why don't priests marry? Is it absurd to believe in God in today's world? These are just some of the questions that Vatican Radio will be putting to Monsignor John Kennedy, an official from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, in a new series running throughout the Year of Faith. It's a way of helping people along as they respond to Pope Benedict XVI's invitation to all of us to deepen our knowledge of why we believe what we believe. The Holy Father is also encouraging us to seek out answers to questions of faith by picking up the Catechism of the Catholic Church. This, he says, gives us the food for thought that we are all seeking. So if you have any questions, big or small, questions that you have always wanted to ask but never have, this is your chance. You can send them on to Monsignor Kennedy at our email address, news@vatiradio.va, or on Vatican Radio English Section's Facebook page, and tune in each Tuesday to find out the answers to your questions of faith. Welcome back to all of our listeners and this week's edition of Questions of Faith with our very own official from the Congregation from the Doctrine of the Faith, Monsignor John Kennedy. Welcome back.
Hello, Emer.
Well, this week we have a question from a listener whose name, we hope you pronounce it correctly, is Pilolo. And he really sent an extremely interesting and important question, particularly for the times we live in. He is asking us, how can I ensure that I am not overcome by this increasingly secular world in my daily life? That opens a whole myriad of questions, doesn't it?
It does. I think his question is wonderful and very profound at the same time. And I'm really glad to discuss it at the beginning of the new year. It has a connection, in fact, to the question we spoke about last time, which was the place of Christ in the modern world. It's almost like an extension. And the kernel of the question regards the various influences that can impact on a person who's trying to live as a Christian or a follower of Christ. I'd like to begin by answering the question, telling our listener that when I was a teenager, I worked one summer with a builder, and he specialised in extensions and roofs and general house maintenance. One thing I remember, at the very beginning, I got into his van, and I noticed in his van he'd all sorts of equipment. He had screwdrivers and saws and power tools, which he took with him to work everywhere and every day. And I said to him, "Why have you so many tools in your van?" And he said, "You never know what you might need when you want to do a job properly." And I think when we're trying to live a life of faith, we need a variety of things to help us along the way. So what I want to say to our listener is the great news is that all of these tools, all of these means of assistance are available from the Lord if we ask him for them. Because as Christians, we believe that God gives us various tools, various graces to help us on our pilgrim journey. And if you want to maybe expand this a little bit and draw upon a military image, God gives us the weapons that we need to assist us. So the good news is we can overcome all of these things and live a spiritual life in the secular world, but not because of our own strength, but rather because of the strength that God gives us every day. The words of the Gospel, St. Matthew, Jesus says, "With God, all things are possible."
That's very interesting, but I'd like to ask you why you used the word or the imagery of the weapon. I mean, are we Christians involved in some sort of battle?
I use the word weapon there purposely, and I think there are maybe two reasons why this should be the case. Firstly, because our listener used the word to ensure that he's not overcome. Being overcome is a situation involving some sort of force or some sort of challenge. And secondly, because our listener was also speaking about a daily struggle or a wearing down, if you like, of one's defences that many people experience in the secular world.
But what do we mean exactly when we use the word secular? We hear it so often, but what does it exactly mean? And what importance does the secular world have for Christians?
The word secular is very familiar. It's a household word, I'd say. And it comes, like many words do, from the Latin term seculum, which means a generation or an age. And it might surprise us to know, in fact, that the word secular refers to those realities or attitudes or even activities that have no spiritual basis. If you wanted to use another word to describe it, you'd say something is secular is something earthly. And you asked in the second part of your question there about the importance or the relevance of the secular world for Christians. So maybe to answer that question, let me give you another image. I have an uncle who wears bifocal glasses. He uses one lens for reading and the other lens for normal vision. And Christians, if you like, have one eye on the world and they have one eye on the world to come, God's kingdom. So this kind of twin vision that they have can sometimes create a little bit of tension. Maybe to give our listeners another image, perhaps, remember in school we had to draw graphs for maths. If you draw a line to represent the secular world, it's like a timeline, a chronological line running from east to west. If you drew a graph to explain the secular, or the heavenly world, if you like, it's like a line that runs north to south. And where those two lines intersect, there is an element in common, but they're going in different directions and they have different focus as well.
So because of this tension, and we have to admit it is very much present in today's world, should we just renounce the earthly secular world, give up at it and live in our own little Christian world?
Well, there's a lot of room for cooperation between the secular and the spiritual. But at the same time, we're very aware that those two worlds are not always in perfect harmony with each other. Jesus, who came into our world and was part of every aspect of our world except sin, spoke of the disconnect that exists between our secular world and our goal, which is ultimately heaven. And he told his disciples to engage with the world, but not to be completely part of it. In a sense, to restrict themselves from being so completely absorbed in the world. And so he gave them values and teachings that would help them to focus, if you like, on the goal of heaven. He didn't tell them, and I think it's important to say this, he didn't say you must flee the world, you must go and hide yourself in a cave or distrust everything about the world all around you. In fact, he actually told them the opposite. He said, go, he said, and spread the good news and make disciples of all the nations, telling them to baptize everybody in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. And if you're listening to the radio recently, Pope Benedict, on the 1st of January for his message for the World Day of Peace, said the Christians shouldn't flee the world, but they should actually engage with the world. If you want to check out that text, you should go to the Vatican Radio website and you'll find the text there. Just go into the search engine.
Indeed, that's rv.va for all of our listeners out there if they're looking for that text. You mentioned the advice that Jesus gave his disciples. Can you give us some examples of the Lord's teaching and on what he told us to do when we find ourselves in the kind of situation raised by our listener?
Well, some examples of the Lord's words will help us to live as authentic believers, even though Jesus' words seem sometimes to be initially very difficult and quite against the conventional wisdom of the world. Let's take the first example, the Lord's teaching on forgiveness. Peter approached Jesus and said, "Look, Lord, how many times must I forgive my brother if he sins against me?" And then Peter proposed 7 times, probably expecting the Lord to say, "Oh no, that's too many. Just maybe forgive him 2 or 3 times. And the Lord surprised him by saying 70 times 7. In the Gospel of Matthew, we find Jesus telling his disciples, if someone forces you to go 1 mile with them, go 2 miles with them. And then another example from the Gospel is Jesus said, I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves. Therefore, this is the best bit, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. So, three teachings there on forgiveness, on patience, and on prudence, you could say, are just some of the tools that the Lord gives us.
So Jesus is really asking us to have another standard, separate to the standard of the secular world, a different approach for the way in which we do things. Apart from what we know from the Gospels, what other sorts of tools can we employ to help us remain faithful to the way Christ wants us to live?
Well, if you look beyond the Gospels to the writings of St. Paul, particularly his letter to the Ephesians, St. Paul is using there an image of a soldier or a gladiator dressed in battle gear. And St. Paul gives us great encouragement when he says, stand firm, then. And then he adds, with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. So Paul's advice there is to say to people, stand firm. That's the first thing. And then he said, come to know the truth as taught by Christ, because he is the way and the truth and the life. And we can do that by, you know, really paying attention to what God says to us, by reading his word. Maybe this new year at the beginning, you haven't made a resolution yet. There are four gospels. Take up one of the gospels or two of them, start reading it and see, and allow yourself to be touched and to be guided by God's words as you stand firm in the faith. And maybe even read the gospel for the first time, all the way through. Maybe you've never done it in your life. And then try to be people of peace as well.
Are there any other things that we can do?
Prayer, because prayer is more than just a conversation with God. If you think about prayer in terms of computer language, in terms of a connection, like the way you'd connect to the internet or a telephone conversation, you phone up your friend. Prayer is that action of our mind and our heart and our bodies and our whole lives that literally opens us completely up to the channel of God speaking to us, in communication with us. And that if by prayer we remain connected to God in the world that wants us to be connected to many other realities as well. Mother Teresa has a very interesting phrase about prayer. She says, prayer is not asking. A lot of people think that prayer is just asking. You go to God when you need something, a favour. But prayer is putting oneself in the hands of God, at his disposition, and then listening to his voice in the depth of our heart.
But is prayer all the same? Or what about going to Mass? Is that different?
Well, the Catechism of the Catholic Church teaches us that among all the forms of prayer, the highest form of prayer is the Mass. So when we accept the invitation of God to listen to his word, to receive the Eucharist, to receive his blessing for our lives, then we really plug into a beautiful gift which helps us to be more faithful to God and to be more alive, I think, as well. When we celebrate the Mass, we not only experience Christ by experiencing him in his word, but we also receive him in a very personal and profound and very intimate way.
Could you suggest other forms of practical activities that would help us to avoid falling into the trap of secularism and materialism?
Well, you see, on the one side, believing is one thing, and then putting your faith into practice is another. And so the Church has taught for centuries now that our faith is not something that we hold within ourselves, but it's actually exercised and even strengthened by our works of charity. So in these days, you know, after Christmas, in the first few days of the new year, we're listening to the reading from the letters of St. John, who tells us that this practical element must form part of our Christian existence. In other words, our love for our brothers and sisters is indeed a demonstration of our love for God. And that there is, in fact, a contradiction then between the person who says, oh, I love God, but then I hate my brother and sister. And St. John says that indeed the love of God flows into the love of the brother and sister, because by loving the brother and sister that we can see, we also express our love for the God whom we cannot yet see. Pope Benedict recently, again, following Christ's example, he said, we have to learn to give ourselves completely to others anything else is not enough. So that's a more of the practical reaching out in love and in charity to others.
You spoke about things that we can do. What about things we should avoid doing?
That's a good one. Yeah, the church has taught again that spiritual growth, growth in the spiritual life, is assisted not only by doing things, but also by the avoidance of doing certain things. For example, the avoidance of sin. In other words, staying away from those things which might actually lead us into sin. Let me give an example. If there's a person, let's say, who has a gambling addiction, and he has to go home and pass by a betting shop. If he wants to overcome that, he might say, it might be a good idea to actually go home a different way so that I avoid falling into the temptation. Or let's say you've got a person who, a group of people, and they find that they drink a lot, or there's a temptation to maybe try illegal substances or viewing immoral material or having maybe negative or critical conversations about others. The wisdom of the church says that we should try and avoid those situations so that we can actually be, we can avoid being drawn away from God and actually also having our inner peace destroyed.
Can you say something about the role of the Christian community in affirming and supporting us in our faith in the midst of this secular world?
I'd like to give you a real life example of this. Some Australians came to Rome recently and I arranged for them to attend the Pope's general audience, which, as our listeners know, takes place on a Wednesday. And they sent me a very nice thank you card afterwards, and I'm sure they won't mind if I read out one of the lines, because it really reminds us of a very important element of our faith, and that is the great witness and the encouragement that we can give to each other. The line that the people wrote on the card was written after they had experienced the great international nature of the audience and seeing people from all over the world who had come to show their love for God and to receive the Pope's blessing. And they said, "It is affirming of one's own faith, seeing so many other people making a public commitment to theirs." So I think this line helps us to understand that we all can have an enormous impact on other people, although sometimes we're not even aware of it. Sometimes our silent presence at Mass, at a prayer service, at some sort of religious event can actually encourage other people, because I would say that even when I'm celebrating Mass, if I see a whole group of young people at Mass, that encourages me. And I'm sure seeing a priest celebrating Mass, it encourages them, so that when I say the words to them, "The Lord be with you," and then they answer back, "And with your spirit," you can see that we're praying together, dialoguing together with God, and strengthening and encouraging each other's faith.
Isn't it true that all of Christ's faithful, priests, religious, and the baptized laity, have a very important role in making Christ present today in this world?
It is true. In fact, another person I met over Christmas told me that she's not involved in politics or high office or anything like that, and she's no direct way of influencing other people in how they might make the right choices in their life. However, she said, in her own way, she starts conversations with people and she discusses aspects of the faith. For example, she might say, "Did you see that Pope Benedict said this last week at his audience? Or did you see that Cardinal so-and-so was writing about that particular aspect of the faith?" She might even quote a paragraph from the Catechism or something like that. And I said to her, I think this could be described as soft evangelization, because it's not this hard-hitting stuff, but it's very soft, very gentle, very dialogical in many ways. And she said to me that she has a lot of encouragement because of this, because she's helping people in a very gentle and quiet way to follow the path of the Lord Jesus.
Is there any special person, say in the history of the church, who can help us understand the dynamic of the secular and eternal?
There are many, but if I could just maybe pick out one for today. There's a saint from the beginning of the church. He lived from about 100 to 165 AD. His name was Saint Justin, and he was a martyr. Most of his works are lost, but two, what we call apologies, and a dialogue did survive. And he speaks about the exact question that our listener asked today about the dialectic of the conversation between the world and God's kingdom. And he says, as citizens, Christians share in all things with others and yet endure all things as if foreigners. Every foreign land is to them as their native country, and every land of their birth as a land of strangers. They pass their days on earth, but they are citizens of heaven. They obey the prescribed laws, and at the same time surpass the laws by their lives. They love all men and are persecuted by all. And then St. Justin concludes with a beautiful simile, which may serve as one final answer to our question today. To sum up all in one word, he says, what the soul is in the body is that is what we are, Christians in the world. The soul dwells in the body, yet it is not of the body. And Christians dwell in the world, yet they are not of the world.
So that brings us to the end of our 9th programme in this series on the questions of faith, accompanying all of our listeners throughout the year of faith. Next week, we're going to be taking a look at what obliges us on holy days of obligation. And of course, what are holy days of obligation? This is just one of many questions that have come into us from the United Kingdom. And we would invite all of our listeners out there to get in contact with us and send in any questions they may have about the faith, big or small, to english@vatiradio.va or via our English section Facebook page, Vatican Radio English section Facebook. Monsignor Kennedy, thank you very much.
Thank you, Emer. God bless you.
We'll see you next week.
See you then.